paradigm. The one that doesn't work, really having full conviction and moving into the one that does work, that is so bright and so inviting for us all, where all possibility lies. This series will be an hour long officially, but Satchinandana Swami, as our guest, is kindly going to stay with us for another half an hour to take questions each time. This is our second session. We had a wonderful first session last week. If you're new to this series, you're most welcome. If you've been with us last week, hopefully you also experienced how invigorating it is to be with our Swami and to be guided into his wisdom. The program will close with some questions as time permits, and then again, there will be more time for questions afterwards. Please send your questions to Michael Sloyer. You can raise your hand. Michael Sloyer will be fielding them. And this is also a really rare and remarkable opportunity to ask questions of our dear speaker. Please take advantage. And it's also a practice to be listening intently and thinking, what's coming up for me and what questions do I have? What would really help me to advance spiritually or in understanding what doesn't work and what does work, if you will? So please do come up with your questions, and you can send them to Michael in a direct message again. A word on the culture that we are co-creating together. We want to have full-hearted participation. That means we're undivided in our attention, fully present, not doing other things, not distracted. That makes a huge difference. If you can have your video on, that really, really helps a lot to be together as a community and fully present. We want to have respect for everyone in this room, and certainly our esteemed guest, Satchinandana Swami, and the teachings that he will be sharing with us, which are very inspiring. I'm convinced you will get a lot from. And lastly, determination. Determination to really take these teachings to heart, to not take it casually, to not just show up and then, okay, next thing, that was nice. It really requires a mindset shift, that we are going in with determination. Today is also a very wonderful day. It's in the yoga tradition, it's called Akshaya Tritiya. And it's a day where eternal possibilities unfold when we make new commitments to the life of the soul. So whatever you decide to take to heart today from the teachings of Satchinandana Swami, you'll feel more within yourself. It's very special that we get to do this today. So your full-hearted participation, respect, and determination are wanted. And Satchinandana Swami is coming to us from Germany. We have many of you from around the world. We're so honored to have you, and certainly to have him. He is my guru. He's an amazing guide for us at UpBuild, instrumental in everything that we do. And we couldn't think of a better thing to offer this community than him, as we try consistently to find ways to bring him back and to share him with you. He's traveling around the world sharing his teachings. He's written many books. He leads amazing kirtans, musical meditations. You should come to New York when he's here at the end of the month for them. And yeah, we can't wait to hear from him. So I am now turning it over to you, Satchinandana Swami, for part two of How Material Life Doesn't Work. Thank you so much.
Yes. I want to affectionately greet everyone. Let me just make sure, am I audible? Can you please, someone give me a sign that the transmission works nicely? Yes, good, I see, good. First of all, a short recap of what happened at the last episode. I wanted to highlight a little bit how relationships that are not based on the truth of who we are, eventually, despite all our attempts to mask them and hide them behind social politeness and so on, ultimately come to a dead end, and they don't work. Today, I have something in mind which will most probably cause a lot of reflection in your mind. I will speak about the main contradiction which we experience. We wish to live, we make arrangements for a long time, but cruel death destroys our hopes. I heard that in Europe, 72% of the people who die never made a will. Perhaps they thought that this would not happen to them, or it's more probably that they tried to sweep the inconvenient truth under the carpet, so to say. But this end of all of our efforts, death, is something which many, many, many people are just suppressing. They are not integrating it into their life, and therefore they usually feel a huge shock when it either happens near them, that means when a near and dear one passes on, or when it happens to themselves. This, in other words, the spiritual poverty which is seen in the material concept of life, which suppresses and puts away the reality, shows up in many ways. My dear everyone, we at the moment in the West have a luxury that the ancient kings of the past times could not even dream of, you know, all this hot and cold water, when we needed entertainment, when we press a button. But this only masks quite imperfectly the underlying quite spiritual crisis. It's quiet. No one speaks about it. This spiritual poverty is by no means only a private problem. It hurts all of us. The moment the inner light dims, the inner darkness manifests as an existential vacuum, which we try to fill with relationships, with wealth, with social status, and so on. But the existential vacuum is still there. I heard that in the last 10 years, the depression of the world population increased, listen to this number, by 218%. Not 100%, 218%. That's the result of loss of the soul. I could now go into the list of how loneliness and alienation happens. I've written something here down on this. People surround themselves with these social networks, yet they yearn for genuine community. I think you know what I'm speaking of. They are so active in the social networks, but genuine community escapes them. And people can drown themselves in information, but they're starving for spiritual wisdom that opens their eyes to the experience of happiness and contentment and so on. And yes, they pursue pleasures on the external platform, but because all this is not connected with who they really are, they lack this peace and contentment. Therefore, and now I come to my main point. In ancient cultures, there was a concept which was called die before you die, or die to live. And because this is a little jarring, it jolts us, I need to explain. I have a very good friend with whom I have opened a retreat center in India. There was an adventure. I never want to do this adventure again. I could tell you stories of snakes who didn't want to leave our land and caused a huge problem, as if they were connected by one mastermind. I could tell you of the amazing ways in which people try to cheat us and so on. But no problem, the retreat center is there. And even the snakes live with us in peace there. So all this I did with one good friend of mine who wrote me a few days ago a WhatsApp message, which was very serious. He said, I have an aggressive cancer. It spreads very much. Snakes would not kill me. The difficulties in India have not harmed me. Now, something in my own body is eating away my vitality. What can you tell me, as my friend? And I said, you have to practice to die before you die. What I meant with this, and as you listen to me, it will become clearer, is that our false ego, our false identification with that which is doomed to leave us, has to go. Because it is this false identification that is at the root of our problems which we have. I remember a little while ago, I was called to come to the funeral of my mother, and it was, of course, emotionally very jarring, because we had a very personal and very active relationship. She was very interested in spirituality. And I remember when we drove with our car into the funeral, to the cremation, and finally we located the chapel also, and then we found a parking place. Then there was a sound in our car. You have reached your final destination. I felt at that time the GPS system was driving home a profound truth. Yes, in the material life, the funeral or the cremation ground is our final destination, but it's only a short resting place for the eternal soul on its continued journey. I would like you all to fast forward your life for a few years. We can anticipate that we will grieve for loved ones. We can anticipate that we all will endure the devastation and the emptiness of profound loss. And we can also anticipate that our physical agility, how we are active, will be weakened because we are assaulted by old age and infirmity, the inevitable messages that announce our exit that is just before us. Despite this knowledge, this jarring knowledge, we have managed in our Western society to sterilize death and to seal off the dying and the dead from public view. There's one Swami in India who says, just like we have tea shops and utility stores on each street corner, we should have on each street corner a place that reminds us, use the time you have in this temporary physical body wisely. Use it for the benefit of who you really are, your true self. I told you in the beginning that here in Europe, 72% of the people die without having left a will because they are victims of this sterilization process or this attempt to push the truth out of their life, and they did not wish to think about it. Most people here in the world focus on living before dying. I remember when I was young, I made a list. I called it the life list. And I had things on it like, I want to visit a Chinese Shaolin monastery in this life. I want to swim with the dolphins in the Black Sea. By the way, I swam with the dolphins in the Black Sea, with big, huge dolphins, and we were a good team. They liked me, I liked them. And I also wrote down on the list, this is a German tourist list, by the way. All Germans have the same dream. They want to visit one time the Angkor Wat temple in Cambodia. So we make a list of desires. We focus on really concentrating on all the presents that life has for us before we die. But Krishna speaks of die before dying. This ego has to go. The ego and his gang members, like that all connect us to an illusion. Lust, anger, greed, pride, and so on. In the Gita, he says, I want to read this to you, freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in thought of me and taking refuge in me. Many people in the past became purified and obtained transcendental love for me. Yes, and for this, becoming purified and raising to our spiritual potential, these anchors that connect us to this world and keep us attached and tied down have to go. we are reminded of Nelson Mandela. When Nelson Mandela left the prison after, I believe, 27 years of imprisonment, shortly after this, he was handed a Bhagavad Gita during a public function. And he said, "Thank you, but I have read it already several times." So the person who had given him a Bhagavad Gita was enthusiastic. "Oh yeah, may I know what you have learned from the Bhagavad Gita?" And Nelson Mandela said something really nice. I think you will love it. He said it also in an interview. He said the Bhagavad Gita taught me that if I did not overcome my bitterness, my hatred and anger towards my perpetrators, though walking free from my prison cell, I would still be very much imprisoned. No. He understood that the ego, with its attachment and so on, binds us to a false world, a dream world, a nightmarish world that brings so much suffering because of this spiritual poverty and existential vacuum that we try to fill with heaven and hell also. My dear everyone, as long as we remain captive by the materialistic mindset of identifying falsely with the body and the mind, we will be held captive. Therefore, to die before you die means to break free of these invisible chains, means to live the life of spiritual freedom. And this is here and beyond. So I would like to do something with all of you now that is very serious. When we started this call and all these little windows went on, whereby which we could all view who's present on the call, I was still in two minds. Should I do what I intend to do? But as I saw the expression on your faces, I felt just very much encouraged, because it's clear, even on second view, I have seen many of you before, but now I see you second time or extra time, that you want in this program something serious. So I will bring you to an exercise that will help you to identify spiritual goals and purposes that will empower your life. So I request everyone, before we start, I also have to do this here. We should have good air in the room. If you don't live next to a street crossing, you might want to open your... maybe if anyone wants to drink something, I have a fruit juice here. Fine. Remove, please, all the distractions which are there. You might want to switch your mobile telephone on pause. Sit straight, please. We will bring you to a very inner state where good thoughts can come. When you're ready, close your eyes. And relax consciously your body. Make a quick scan. Start with your feet. Wiggle your toes, then you can quickly feel them. And go in one sweeping motion up to your knees. Then your sitting bones. And relax. Now, please move up your lower back, come to your upper back. Please sit straight. Then relax. Relax your shoulders. Good. Your chest. Your tummy or belly. Relax your head. Most important, your face. Those of you who wear spectacles, it might be a good idea to put the spectacles down for a while. Sometimes we see the inner vision better when we stop the outer vision. And concentrate, please, on the breathing sensation in your nostrils. Take good inhalations and good exhalations. Be curious. We will now move into the future. Fast forward. For some it's 20 years, for others 40 years, still others 50 years. And picture a large gathering of people coming into a room. The mood is somber and serious. You have departed from this world, and this is the occasion of your own memorial service. Try to picture the scene in the room. Who has come? Where have you gathered? What are these people thinking and feeling? You can see on their faces, they're very serious. They are not dressed casually, most of them. Only some of them. How do you feel seeing them? Everyone is now seated. And the person who knows you best comes forward to give a eulogy, some words about you. Who would that person be? They begin to talk about your life, first where you were born, names of your parents, your youth, your education. Perhaps your first job. They would talk about your interests, your hobbies, how you like to utilize your free time. And also the major junctures in your lifetime. They also begin to reveal deeper feelings about you. How would you like them to complete the following sentences? What I loved most about their personality was, please complete the sentence. What I loved most about their personality. It's you, your personality, was. Then the speaker turns to new subject matters. The greatest achievement of the person who left us was, please complete the sentence. The greatest achievement of the person whose body is now lying and whose you was. And finally, the last subject they would speak about you is the person would say, the person who is lying now in the before us, they made a difference to the world by, please complete the sentence. The scene now disperses. Kindly rub your hands together to feel a warm or create a warm sensation. Bring them to the eyes. And to the face, like this. And then slowly give yourself the time you need. Return to room awareness and this Zoom conference awareness. My dear everyone, what would you like to be most loved about you? This was the first subject. For me, I've done such exercises. I want to be remembered as a person who supported others and who was alive and flexible and remained curious. The greatest achievement. What do you wish to be your greatest achievement? This doesn't need to be to build an extra bridge over the Hudson River in New York because you feel there's always so much traffic on the existing bridges. No, it could be something in relationship to your children or to your friends. And they made a difference to the world. What would you like your contribution, in other words, to be there? Looking at our life, my dear everyone, before the mirror of our inevitable mortality brings us quickly to see the essence of life. That here in German we have a philosopher, he is Germany, he's gone, Goethe, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. I don't know how you would pronounce his name in English, Goethe maybe. He said, if your thinking becomes confused and you lose yourself, then go out to the dead. He was speaking of the graveyard. Because when you look into the face of death, questions are answered about what should be done and what should not be done. And if you have identified a few things, ask yourself, what have you done, or what do you intend to do tomorrow to become that character or person whom this exercise has shown you, whom you would like to become? I will close my session today by bringing to your good attention the essence of this teaching. We have to somehow come to the level where we don't only think about the self, but where we act from the level of the self. This is what I told my friend, who was suddenly surprised by this notification of this that you have this aggressive cancer, and who asked me what to do, if I have any words on this. And I said, yes, I have been in this situation 3 times. I also had an aggressive cancer. I dealt with the aggressive cancer by it was when I was young. I don't recommend it, but I thought, if you have an unwanted guest in your life, in your home, don't feed him anything, don't give him anything to eat. So I fasted for a little more than a month, total fast. I only had one spoonful of honey to keep my vital functions there, because I also wanted to read and write a book and do so many things when I was fasting. And as I said, I was a little young at that time. And I was in deadly accidents and so on. And I found out that all these 3 encounters with possible death have always brought me to the essence that, okay, I will leave everything behind. I will leave my nice wristwatch behind. I will leave my glass with carrot juice behind. even my monk dress I will leave behind. My library, where I have such wonderful wisdom texts. So let me go for the inner treasures. Let me live on the platform now, of that eternal life, where nothing will be taken away. Yes. I thank you very, very, very much for listening. I hope that this was useful for you. And I promise I won't do this every session to guide you to your own memorial service. We can go now to the question and answer session if our host is still alive.
Did these get recorded, Ma?
Yeah.
Oh, so you can see the part we missed.
Everyone, please kindly mute. We're hearing something of you. Thank you. So we will go to our questions. We'll start with Bruno.
Hi, Satchinanda Swami. So lovely to hear from you.
Oh, yes, Bruno, I do remember you. You came to Europe, to Radadish, is it?
I did, yes.
Wonderful. Yes, I do remember you. I do remember you fondly. Yes, Bruno, what is your good question?
So when we consider reincarnation, I'm wondering what the right approach is, in the sense that, you know, one, to have the perspective, I have many lifetimes to become perfected, to become liberated, to become enlightened. And so let me, you know, move towards that at its own pace and its own rhythm, and not be obsessed about it. Presumably an alternative approach may be one of, you know, I'm here with Satchinanda Swami, I'm with this incredible Sangha, I've sort of achieved or arrived to where I am. What an incredible gift and opportunity. And so I should in fact use this precious gift and really focus and, you know, obsess, maybe the wrong word, but be single focus minded on, I'm going to try to do everything I can to become enlightened in this lifetime. And so I'm just wondering if there's an orientation that you think is the most skillful in that regard.
It's a very clear and very good question. I'm eternal. I have eternal, I have all the time in the world. I'm eternal. Let me use the time wisely on this. I believe the truth, the best attitude is to have something of both. Let me explain. When we understand that we are eternal and that we pass on, even though our body dies and we leave our achievements behind, then we understand this. We have moved on in our evolution. We are a little bit like a child who has progressed from the age where they are obsessed with toys and moved to a higher level, where they are no longer obsessed with their toy cars and their, I don't know what they, you know, toy cars, puppets, and so on and so forth. So a person who understands that he is eternal loses in a similar way his obsession for material life, a life which Hermann Hesse described to be the life of the Kindermenschen, the children, human beings, those who are like children. So we will not dive into these illusory pleasures any longer. At the same time, there is something like spiritual stress, which is not very good. It's where we become totally obsessed with our spiritual progress, no longer our material progress, and develop a similar fixation, if not even spasm, in the mind, and that can be avoided by being compassionate towards others, by being good to others, by taking interest in people's life. You can break out from, so to say, spiritual selfishness or spiritual or obsession for one's own spiritual progress. When you are understanding you are eternal and you pass on, there is also another very, very healthy mindset. That is to surrender to the divine, to the supreme being, to the more than human dimension, and already develop your relationship to that world. And once you bring more of God in your heart, your life will become more godly and also more relaxed, because you resign everything to Him. You don't become obsessed with the achiever's mood. I must achieve this state, this level, and so on. But you enter the receiver mood, where you get so many divine gifts, and you are also then peaceful. You don't think, oh my God, I'm missing out on something, or I'm not paying enough attention to this. So let me summarize. Understanding that you're eternal and that there is something like the like a reincarnation encourages us to leave the toy world behind, and where you become obsessed with toys and grief when a toy breaks. It also brings us to the understanding that I'm not part of this world, but I'm part of the Lord. And that understanding matures into surrender, where you let Him do. Let go and let Krishna. There is such a statement. So that will also be there. That surrendered mood frees you from this achiever mentality, which can be also there in spiritual life. Thank you, Bruno. Such a nice. I hope I will be able to see you when I come to New York. Otherwise, I will run through all the streets of New York and try to find you like a needle in a hay heap. Haribo.
We'll see you there, inshallah.
Good, good.
Thank you so much, Bruno. I have a follow-on to that question, Sachinandana Swami. Knowing your life and how much you've poured into your spiritual practice, how do you distinguish between this yogic idea of yavasayatmika buddhi, or single-minded attention, strong focus and intensity, and being more surrendered and receiving and letting it be up to God's grace? It seems to me that there's a dynamic tension there, that you have given so much with such vigor and tenacity and determination, with a single pointed focus and goal to attain pure love, to attain pure love of God. And at the same time, there's this gracefulness and ease. So how do we look at that? How do we navigate that?
I always feel that we have been given certain human endowments, our body, our mind, willpower, and all these things. And for our spiritual life, we need to utilize this, to purify it, to bring it to best use. However, I have always seen that I may try my best in using whatever I have been given, but trying to go to the spiritual dimension is would be like trying your best to climb up the falling rain to go to the cloud. It does not work. It does not work. It has never worked. It will never work. So you need to keep a balance between trying your best and praying for grace and for help. I have a formula how I live my life. About 40% of what I do, I cover with my intellect, my willpower, my contacts, my whatever resources are there to achieve a certain end. But about 60% I leave free for divine intervention. And I have seen that in leaving space for the Krishna factor or God factor has brought amazing results that I could never have reached on my own steam. You know, before my house is perhaps the greatest symbol of my life. There's a path that I have created by walking through the forest. My house on one side is my ashram. It's an ashram. On one side is bordering to a lake. On that side, we have also Josephine and Napoleon. It's a pair of ducks. And we have Beaver Prabhu, Master Beaver. He also lives there. He is a recent addition to our ashram. And on the other side of our ashram, my ashram borders at a forest. And into this forest, I have created a little path that brings me to a main path for good walking. And this path has appeared by walking every day. I mean, whenever I'm here through the forest, and it emerged. It took, I would say, 6 months before it emerged and came out. So I think in our lives, we also, like that path builder, are walking with our intelligence, and we see this would be good, this would be good to do, this would be. But then we also, by leaving some things open and not planning it to the very end, we leave space and time for a divine intervention to take place. And that is a wonderful, wonderful way of living. Recently, my friend will have to go also most probably to surgery. There is radiotherapy and hormonal therapy immediately, and then after they want to do also surgery. Yes, he will prepare himself as good as he can for the surgery, but he will also pray for the Lord to come and help him overcome this present health challenge. No? So leaving space is, I think, very, very important. Leaving the divine corner open, leaving the divine thing is important. Then you are also not totally overwhelmed by anxiety. You know, if you are the only one who plans and the only one who protects your plan, then you are anxious all the time. This is a little bit my formula. 40-60. 40% you, 60% the Lord. And that will emerge as you move forward with your life.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. I will personally try to follow that more as you've guided us. Thank you.
Yeah.
So perhaps you can just give us some closing words before we transition to the unofficial Q&A.
Yes. I can see all of you. You're sitting there. Oh my God, I just died. Now at this moment, I don't have any question because I just died. Gandhi used to say, to live life properly, you need two boxes. One is the box of life, the other is the box of death. Because this is what it means to live in this material world. These are the realities, my dear everyone. And each box has the key that opens the secrets of the other box. In other words, if I enter with my thought and with my awareness the fact that I will be dead, I will find in this box, treasury box, the key to open the box of life. And vice versa. If I live properly, consciously, and open that box, I will find the key for the other box and will not be surprised. But thinking about the fact that we will die gives us a very good encouragement to live the life we are meant to live, our own life, and not imitate someone else. And it also helps us to separate that which matters most from those things that don't matter at all. These are my words in passing. I am looking at my wristwatch, so I think it's time for you to close this part of the session and then open the other box, the social room where we discuss some more. Thank you all very much. It was a great pleasure for me to address you all on these subjects, and see you very soon for the upcoming episodes and other things.
So grateful to have you, Satchinandana Swami, and thank you everybody who's come for this very, very important wisdom that will set us straight on where are our next steps to walk the path toward the true self, the soul. I hope that everyone gets that feeling of wind in their sails today. So if you can't stay on, thank you again. We'll see you next week for more on How Material Life Doesn't Work with Satchinandana Swami, continuing the series into the third episode. And if you can, then we will have time for questions now. So we'll get into next questions. Deborah, would you kindly ask your question?
Yes. Hi, Maharaj. Thank you so much for the lecture and meditation. My name is Deborah.
Thank you, Deborah. I see you.
Excuse my hat. I'm just sitting outside and getting some sun. My question is, I'm very much aware of the principle, the bhakti principles, especially that we aren't the soul, that we are the soul and that we aren't the ego. And understanding this principle is one thing. I very much understand this in my heart, but practicing it and really living and breathing it, and being consistent in this faith is another. And my question is how can one stay hopeful and faithful with this principle when I feel a level of entrapment to reach these goals, and that I feel that there's certain circumstances and perhaps it's my disposition that knocks me down from obtaining this.
Thank you very much, Deborah. And by the way, this hat is very suitable for wearing. Yes, you have touched onto a very, very important point. You do need inner strength for this. To act on the spiritual platform, you do need spiritual strength, because there are so many distractions. Also, you have so many developed habits for you from your material life, the way to think. You have habitual thought patterns, behavior patterns, and so on. And to break free from all this is requiring some spiritual strength. You do need to have a spiritual practice for this. In India, they tell a very nice story. There was a village, and there was a very rich man who was threatening villagers to evade their property so that he could seize the property and merge it with all his other properties. So he once came to one man, skinny man. He was this rich man was very heavily built with big muscles, and he said, "I give you 1 year time. You have to evade your property and sign it over to me. If you don't do this, I will first break all your bones, and then I will break your neck." So he had done this before, so he know the man knew that this was not an empty threat. And he went to the saintly person and said, "What should I do?" And the saint said, "Well, very simple what you should do. Do you, when does your cow calf?" Oh, said the man, "I think in 1 week or 2 weeks." Okay, said the wise man. "Then when the little calf is there, you take it every morning and carry it the 300 steps to the Hanuman temple on the hill and carry that down. That's the only thing you need to do. You will understand after 3 months what I told you." So in those times, there was a lot of faith in the advice of saintly people, and our man, who was threatened by this thug, this gangster, took the calf when it was born and carried it up. After 3 months, he noted, "My God, I'm developing muscles in the legs and in the arms." Ooh. And he continued on 3 more months, and he became really muscular, because calves are growing weights. They become more heavy every day as they eat. After 6 months, a calf is, you really need some strength. But because he was building up the strength gradually, it was possible for him. And after 1 year, he was very muscular. And when the gangster came, this rich man, and saw the muscular man, he left and did not want any confrontation. So building up strengths in a gradual way is also something you need to do on your spiritual path, Deborah. Therefore, I would recommend to you a regular spiritual practice that is, and a life that is composed out of five S. Now, you are outside. Do you have a mobile telephone with you? No, no problem. Then you can review. I will tell this now. I wanted to see that you could take notes, but you can review this. The first S that will build your spiritual strengths is to read in spiritual wisdom literature very regularly, like the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, Nectar of Instruction. There are many, the upbuilt people can guide you. Shastra, that's the first S. The second S that will build your spiritual strengths is sadhana or spiritual practice. Like I'm having a spiritual practice of that takes me from 3 hours each day. You may start with a practice of 20 minutes. That's good enough. The next is sangha, that is good association. The fourth is seva, regular service, where you are serving the Lord and serving others. And finally, satacha, a lifestyle that is good for your spiritual development. These are the five S which will make you spiritually strong. So it's shastra, wisdom literature, sadhana, spiritual practice, seva, service, sangha, good association, and five, satacha. And I would do like this, Deborah. You can maybe review this part of the lecture where I'm answering your question. When you come home, take a piece of paper, make 5 divisions in the paper, 5 lines, and then see how you can fill up these 5, please help me, columns, they're columns, not like in the newspaper, this thing. Okay, today for my sadhana I do this, today for my shastra I do this, and so on. And this will make you spiritually a giant, Deborah. 100%, but without practice, Deborah, it will be very difficult to overcome the pushing and pullings, pushing forces and pulling forces that are visible, that are there in your own mind, in your own habits, in the environment, in your life circumstances, and so on. It's a pleasure to see you, and all the best for you, Deborah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you so much, Deborah. Lakshmita, are you there? Are you able to ask your question?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
My respectful obeisances. So I'm so grateful to have met you today. And today it was really an amazing topic, because like this was always like a burning question in me. Though I have this knowledge of self and the purpose, so as you said, though I'm like drowned with knowledge and also about the spiritual practices, but still, you know, I'm finding quite hard. Like I'm always dying before death, and death scares me the most. Like even today during the meditation, it was like very hard to imagine. I could not really imagine that I'm going to die, but I know it's the ultimate reality, so it was really hard. So my question is, like there is really a very long gap with the knowledge and practice. I don't know, like I'm feeling very hard to align the knowledge and practice. So do you suggest how to act on the level of self and how to not really forget a real identity? Because due to the conditioning and everything, due to the association and due to the association with material people and everything, even due to the past conditioning, I feel like it's very hard to stay fixed in the identity. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lakshmita. It was it's a very, very good question that to a bigger or lesser degree concerns all of us. Yes, we are practicing spiritual life in an environment that is difficult. To answer your question, I will tell you a story. Please listen carefully. It was known that on one mountain lived a very enlightened saint. So one day, three people who searched after genuine spiritual enlightenment made the difficult walk up that mountain. And finally, it took them, I think, 3 days. They reached the top of the mountain and they found the hut of that saintly person. There was only one hut. And they asked him, "How do we become enlightened?" And he said, "Good choices." Then the second said, "Yeah, but that's the difficulty. How do we make good choices?" And he thought for a moment and he said, "By experience." He answered very briefly. So the third person said, but how can we monitor our life and have good experiences?" And again he thought for a while and he said, "Bad choices." Bad choices. So Lakshmita, some of us learn immediately by making very good choices, strong choices, not weak choices. But some of us, it doesn't work like this. We first have to go through our life. And then I want to recommend to you, Lakshmita, see where the life which you lead brings you to. And if you make your experiences not just in an unreflected way, but reflect afterwards, you know, you will learn from your experiences and then one day make good choices. I think I would recommend to you, who is a very intelligent young lady, to also stay in the company of the good people. When you stay long enough with good people, their qualities will sometimes come into your heart. Good qualities and bad qualities come through sangha, through association with people. And this is a very often underestimated point, but this is a real truth. Good and bad comes through good and bad people to us. So that is my little recommendation. But thank you for your very, very... When I was young like you, yes, when I heard about death, I could not relate to it. I thought that's what other people do, not what I will do. you will meet death by meeting people who have died, and you will then think differently. Good, but Nice. Everyone is so nice here on this call. Thank you, Lakshmita. I wish you all the best and see you very soon again.
Thank you so much. Very much.
Thank you, Lakshmita. Scott, please ask your question.
Thank you. Nice to be with you again, Sachinandana.
Yes, Scott, I remember you as well.
Thank you. My question is, how does the soul make use of material life?
Yeah. This is a very, very good question. Let me phrase it a little different as, how do we become connected with all this and then utilize material life? And it is through a little knot in the heart. There's a Sanskrit word for it, Hridaya Grantis. It is really one of the major knots that binds the soul to temporary life. And this is through the ego, or in this case more specific through identification. I want to tell you a little funny and quite embarrassing story from my own life. You know, as someone who constantly moved around, now I move around also, but I use trains and also airplanes. But there was a time when I was constantly driving in cars. Not myself, I'm not a good driver, but there was always a driver or an assistant with me. And we were absolutely dependent on our car. This was more important than our meals, that the car was working. I know sometimes cars did not work and everything was so troublesome. So we had just given up an old car, which really was a very cheap car, which simply could not be repaired any longer. And someone, an actor, a very prominent actor in Germany, had known me and had asked, is there any way I can help? And I said, yeah, I don't know if you can help so much, but desperately need a car. Oh, I know someone in Mercedes-Benz, you know, they make these expensive cars, and he can give us a car, a very good car, which is quite which is only driven for 1 year. So that's wonderful. So then I got this new Mercedes-Benz, which only is driven for 1 year, and everything worked so nice and so swiftly, and there was never any repair. I was the most, as far as the car situation was concerned, it was now solved. I was very happy. So, Scott, then we came to Berlin. We parked the car before a big seminar space, and I was giving a series of lectures for 1 week in that seminar space. My subject was "There is no death." I still remember. And one day, as I was talking about how attachments keep us bound to this body, and then death is so frightening for us, I heard a gruesome sound from the window. It was metal bumping into other metal. And I knew, oh no! The first time in my life where I have a decent car, and now someone has driven into the car, oh no! And I have to go all over again, find another car. This time I will only get a very cheap car. And I was really very sad. I really felt upset. why did I come to Berlin at all? Don't I know that Berlin is not safe for cars? And you know, like this, my mind was going. So I then, you know, when you give a seminar, long seminars, you can give. You can do what I did. I said, let us stop. Let us make a group exercise. So I made a group exercise to keep everyone busy and ran to the window to look down and assess the damage. And Scott, what I saw was, it was not my car which had been broken. It was another car. Two cars behind my car, and I felt so relieved and went back to my seminar. And then later in the evening I had time to think about it. Why did I suffer? I suffered because I was so identified with the new car. Why did I stop to suffer? Because I was no longer identified with the damage. That other car, two cars behind my car, was not my car. I did not feel any connection with it. So this identification to the body, to the mind, to the concept of I, this is me, and mine, these are my possessions, the extended I, has to change in the spiritual practice into I am actually a part of Krishna and Krishna is mine, or you know, this is my seva, my service to him, and so on. It is, but this cannot be theoretical. This has to be practical. It has to be real. And again, I want to say what I said to the first inquirer. I think Deborah was her name. We can only obtain this inner strength by practice, just like this man had the practice to carry the calf up, and he learned in such a way. No, not he learned, he became physically strong. We require a spiritual practice. It's very important, Scott, and I have seen you now many years. I think if you have not yet put your attention on this subject matter, it's good to speak to those who are close to you in New York about an appropriate spiritual practice for you. And you will see some wonderful changes will happen where you become more and more detached. I have been in situations just recently which were very challenging, but those who were with me could see that I was very detached and calm and peaceful, and they reported this to me. They said, well, why are you, you were so peaceful? A few years ago it was not like that. And I said, I'm happy that you saw it. I don't even see it. It's so natural for me now to act in such a peaceful way and detached way that I don't even notice it any longer. And then I was thinking, oh yes, something is happening inside. And it is, I owe this to two things, my spiritual practice and of course divine grace, which makes everything possible. A wonderful question, Scott. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Satchinandana Swami.
Thank you, Scott. We'll have just one last question here. I can ask on behalf of Patsy if that's better. The question is that, so she's referring to me, that I had started out by saying material life doesn't work. So why would God create a world with laws that don't work and then put us in it?
Um, Before this question is another question. Why did we come here in the first place? What brought us here if we are together with if we are with the Lord? And it is, according to the Vedic perspective, our most precious gift misused. Our most precious gift is our independence that will always remain with us. It's the most precious feature of our existence. Excuse me. It's called Svatantra. One's own willpower and acting power. It's freedom. But so we wanted this to be experienced independent from God. There was not a malicious interest to leave him and so on. We just wanted our, perhaps like a little child. I remember when I was a child, I would go with my grandfather, and he would have me he would have my little hand, and we would walk, and then I would shout, I can go alone, I can go alone, alone, alone. And what could grandfather do? He let go of my hand, and I ran all over the place, climbed on every conceivable tree as we were walking. But the moment I saw a dog, I ran back and slipped my little hand in his hand. He laughed at that time, and he questioned me, "You can go alone, no?" No, the dog is there. And we continued together until we passed the dog. And so there was nothing malicious in it. There was just a certain desire to exercise my freedom. So we have this also, and then the Lord creates this world for us, where we can be so-called alone. But as we are trying, we start to miss Him and miss this divine union. And then the Lord gives us scriptures and saints who walk this planet, and spiritual processes, and we can utilize them and restore that original balance which we left temporarily. So the world is made in such a way that you can be independent, you can live your dream. You can be the king of your imaginary kingdom. It's everything is provided for this. But the frustration which you experience, or the lack when you try, is also the mercy from above. And then you do your journey back. But this is only for those who are sincere and God conscious. There are many other souls, the majority, who don't go this way back. They don't like to do this. Yeah, so this is as good as I can answer this in a brief history of time. I think there is such a book out. We will close here. I thank everyone very much. Let us not go indefinitely here, so that you will all come back. All the best for you. Thank you for being with us, and see you next Wednesday, if time permits. If your time permits.
Thank you so much, Sachinanda Swami. It's so precious to have you with us. We can't wait for more. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. Please do come. Make the time to be with us. It means a lot, and we hope it serves you well. All the best.